Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport after another fantastic day at the French Open. Day 9. My name is David Law. I'm not in Paris. Catherine Whittaker most certainly is. She's just had a cheese board as her dessert after a 15-hour day. We can allow Catherine Whittaker to have a cheese board because she's been speaking to Chris Evert first thing in the morning. She's been speaking to Andy Murray live on Eurosport. That's an interview we're going to bring you very soon here on the Tennis Podcast. How are you feeling, Catherine?
Tired but buoyed by possibly not my first cheese board of the day.
You've had multiple cheese boards.
I think I had a sort of a mini cheese board at lunch. What happens when I find it impossible to say no to cheese, so when I'm presented with it, I find it just sort of going into my mouth without me having any sort of agency over the process. So, and there is always, when in France, there always seems to be cheese available and presented to you. So, yeah, I'm a mere victim of a sort of aggressive cheese board pushing French agenda.
This is going in an unexpected direction. But anyway, I started it, so I better carry on. Catherine, first of all, we're going to hear, as I said, from Andy Murray talking to you after his victory over Karen Khachanov a little bit later in this show.
Look at you pronouncing Khachanov correctly, David. Anyone would think you'd had a lesson in it.
Well, yeah, just 24 short hours ago, I found out how you pronounce the guy's name. You wait until we get on to Veronica Cepeda-Roig or whatever her name is.
Cepeda-Roig, yeah.
Yeah, you wait until we get on to her. Right. Anyway, first of all, though, Karen Khachanov, he came out blitzing at the start. I mean, he was firing forehands as hard as he possibly could. He's a strapping lad, 6 feet 6 inches tall. But we said in the show last night, I think we both felt that this guy was tailor-made for Andy Murray. Murray eats these guys up and spits them out, doesn't he? 21 years of age. You can see him bristle at the idea of this young buck trying to encroach on his world number one territory. And it was as though he was saying to him, come on then. Come on, hit it harder. Come on, harder. No, harder. Come on. And the guy could not knock him down. That was Andy Murray at his best today, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I watched them practice together alongside one another, not hitting against one another, but they had to practice on the Philippe Chatrier court this morning alongside one another, because morning practice time on Philippe Chatrier is very precious and you have to share it with one other player. And generally speaking, the slots are allocated according to what time you're scheduled to play on the court, so usually you will end up hitting alongside your opponent for the day. Obviously, that was Karen Khachanov's first ever hit on the Philippe Chatrier court, and there was so much going on. I said on my piece to camera on Eurosport that it's like a weigh-in before a boxing match. You know, there's so much going on that isn't about what's officially going on, and Khachanov looked completely relaxed. But equally, I did see him every now and then look over, dart his eyes over towards Andy Murray just to check if he was watching him. And Andy Murray was not at any stage watching him, which told me that Murray was saying, I'm the world number one. This is about me. You might think that this is about you, you young upstart, but this is about me. And it was exactly as you said, really, kind of the perfect match for Andy Murray and his progress of growing into this tournament, because he loves that kind of match. He loves to play somebody that has a weakness. Khachanov's backhand is his weakness, similar to Del Potro in the previous round, a glorious player, but with a very obvious weakness. And Murray is ruthless and merciless with a player with any weakness, and he exploited it today. I had a chat with Mats Wilander, who I feel like I mention every minute on the podcast, but that's only because I find everything he says so insightful. I had a chat with him afterwards about Khachanov. He was impressed. He thinks he's a good player, going to be a better player, but he had a lot to say about the fact that players with weak backhands shouldn't be encouraged when they're young to run around that backhand and play on their forehand. You know, you've got to develop the backhand. You shouldn't just accept, oh, my backhand is a weakness, I'm going to just run around it and hit my forehand. Maybe, you know, when you're 29 and there's little development to be done, you have to accept your limitations. But at the age of 21, which is where Khachanov is, you know, you've got to be trying to develop that backhand and hit it, and not be going, oh, you know, my backhand's rubbish, I'm going to try and hit the forehand. So I think there's something to be said for that. And it's no accident that the players at the top of the game, they don't have a weakness, do they, these days? You cannot get away with having any weakness. You can have particular strengths, but you cannot have a weakness. And look, I think Khachanov's great. I think he is the real deal, but I think he's going to have to develop that backhand if he is to be the real deal in terms of, you know, being a top five player, Grand Slam contender. And it was precisely the performance that Andy Murray needed and wanted today.
Couple of notes from the commentary on Eurosport. I was watching the coverage today, and one of the things Mats was saying in his courtside position was, because he was down on the courtside, he wasn't in the commentary box, and he was saying that he feels the guy has just got to stop trying to just hit winners with the forehand. He's got to work points and develop ways and almost trust his game to wear Murray down rather than just trying to hit harder and harder and harder. And that happens a lot, I think, at that age. They don't have that maturity. They don't necessarily have that belief in their own physical ability to keep it going that long.
And you think you've got to do too much, don't you? Or they think they've got to do too much. You think, goodness me, there's no way I can last or win any lengthy rallies against the almighty Andy Murray. The only way I'm going to beat him is if I can hit through him. You know, you sort of panic and think you've got to do too much. You know, that's a very well-known pattern of the underdog against the higher-ranked opponent.
Particularly one like Murray.
Well, exactly. Particularly, just one on the subject of Mats Wilander doing his courtside commentary. There is a fixed sort of GoPro-type camera that is fixed on his face while he's doing that. And that camera is constantly live. It's not constantly on air, but it is constantly giving a feed back to our office, our British Eurosport office and media control room here on site. And it should be a TV channel of its own. Watching Mats Wilander watch tennis is basically the greatest joy in life. The guy, I mean, he starts laughing mid-rally. He breaks out into grins. He's literally on the edge of his seat most of the time. And his enthusiasm for the sport is something that he needs to have a YouTube channel. Mats Wilanderkamp needs to have a YouTube channel because it is thoroughly infectious.
I can't stand enthusiastic people, can you?
I don't know what to say to that, David.
It's really irritating.
The irony is too great.
Yeah, really irritating. Another quick note. John McEnroe was the complete opposite. His view was that Karen Khachanov is a top 10 player inside the next 2 years, probably less.
And 2 years long time, though. 2 years is a long time. I don't think that's that bold a prediction.
I think it's a pretty big statement. I mean, if you consider that the players that have not yet been inside the world's top 10, Nick Kyrgios has not been in the world's top 10 yet. Alexander Zverev has just about made it. Grigor Dimitrov has barely been in it.
But 2 years ago, Alexander Zverev hadn't been talked about at all. So, and he is on the brink of the top 10, isn't he? I mean, he will be a top 10 player within weeks, probably, if not a few months maximum. So, and tennis will look very different in a couple of years' time, I think. So, look, I'm not necessarily saying yes, absolutely, definitely, Karen Khachanov is a top 10 player within a couple of years' time, but I don't think that's that bold a statement. I think that's, you know, not unlikely.
Hmm. Okay. At this juncture, I feel it is only correct that I identify that at this point I've definitely been proven wrong about Andy Murray's French Open campaign, because I had him out before the quarterfinal stage. And I would say the naivety with which I approached those predictions, and I think I realised it after I'd made them, because I was kind of trying to back out of my prediction of almost immediately, because it's a slam, because it is best of five, we're into a slam, it is a different beast, and players become different players. That's why Djokovic losing to Querrey and Istomin was such a shock. If you look at the stats, Andy Murray hasn't lost very often before the quarterfinal stages. I can't remember what the stat is, some crazy stat about how consistent and the others are.
The last time it happened was in the fourth round to Kevin Anderson in the 2015 US Open, and that in itself was an utter anomaly. He's reached 25 consecutive Grand Slam second weeks. You know, that speaks for itself. I'm not going to be rubbing any salt into any wounds here, David. You might be surprised.
Particularly
to
know, not
yes.
with your predictions.
I think I haven't actually double checked my predictions. I think, and I'm quite happy to be hammered on social media if I'm misrecalling here, but I think I did predict a Murray Nishikori quarterfinal.
Yeah,
but
you did.
I did.
I've got them in front of me. You did.
I didn't do so with any great confidence at all. I did hover over both names in that quarter of my prediction spreadsheet for a very long time. So I probably shouldn't be admitting to that, should I? But look, there was so much uncertainty in that portion of the draw that I don't apportion any blame at all, really. But also I'm delighted that my predictions have completely come true and take full credit for that. Thank you very much.
You also did have Grigor Dimitrov in the quarterfinals, so we'll just mention that. I had Isner against Zverev at this stage, and I feel really stupid. I mean, Andy Murray, I would be really nervous about letting him know that, although I probably will at some point. But the fact is, you know, he's made a fool out of me, and really, I think, if you really think about it, and with that history in mind, that, like I say, they're different beasts, these guys, when they get to the big ones. So, as you mentioned, Nishikori next. And Nishikori has come through. He is having a funny old tournament, isn't it? And I don't know whether you, first of all, point to the fact that he has this fragility physically, and he has these... He lost the first set 6-love to Fernando Verdasco. He's often, throughout this tournament, looked out on his feet, and yet he's still there. So what do you do? Do you say, this guy needs to buck his ideas up at the start of a match, or do you pay great tribute to the fact that he overcomes these challenges and still ends up the winner?
I don't know. I don't know is the answer to that. You know, I really don't know where in today's fourth round result the Verdasco mental fragility ends and the Nishikori physical fragility wins. Look, no doubt he deserves a lot of credit for winning through that match. He lost a 6-love first set. I think anybody that loses a 6-love first set in a Grand Slam fourth round deserves immense praise for winning through, especially winning through in four. But why is he losing a 6-love first set? And he just doesn't fill you with confidence, does he? I was speaking to a colleague, a producer from Wow Wow, which is the primary Japanese broadcaster here at the French Open and at all the Grand Slams, actually. And they're fantastic broadcasters, wonderful people to work alongside, really, really professional, kind, lovely people. But obviously, they, you know, they live and breathe for Kei Nishikori. He's David Beckham in Japan. He's everything, and you know, their viewership lives and dies by his success. So obviously, they analyze his every movement with intense scrutiny, and I'm not sure they know hugely what to make of it either. They hope and they keep their fingers crossed, because you just don't ever know with him. I don't know. Look, he could retire in the second game of that quarterfinal with Andy Murray. He could be, or he could do what he did at the US Open. I can't fathom him. I really can't.
Yeah, and of course he beat Andy Murray in five sets at the US Open. It was that one that was infiltrated by a butterfly. There was the huge gong from the technical equipment court side. The loud PA speaker went off and seemed to upset Andy Murray's rhythm. I think I think Andy Murray was at the end of his tether, really, wasn't he, at that point? He'd had the Wimbledon win, he'd won the Olympics, he'd gone to the final of Cincinnati, and I think he pretty much hit the wall physically and mentally and emotionally at that point. Take nothing away, again, from Nishikori. He won the match fair and square, but that's what happened then. Let's have a little listen to the interview that Catherine did with Andy Murray straight after this win over Karen Khachanov. She had him in the Eurosport studios. Good little chat. Plenty of subjects covered. Let's have a little listen.
World number one Andy Murray is through to the quarterfinals of the French Open once again, and I'm delighted to say he joins me in the studio now. Andy, how good does it feel to be reaching the second week of a slam and knowing that you're improving with every match?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously didn't come into the tournament playing well at all. But with each day, I've felt a bit better, gained in confidence with each win, and in practice, been hitting the ball a little bit cleaner, a bit better every day. And I think you know, last two matches in particular, I played some really good stuff from start to finish. So a few things could still be a bit better, but from where I was 10 days or so ago, it's really, really positive.
You talked on the eve of the tournament about the struggle that you're experiencing and about trying to enjoy that struggle. Do you feel now like the struggle's over, or just that you've found a way to enjoy it?
I mean, I think I'll kind of look back on that a bit at the end of the at the end of the tournament. But I mean, certainly the last 5 or 6 days, not just in the matches but in practice, I've felt so much better than I did, you know, the last 5-6 weeks. You know, I know where I was. I know how badly I was playing in practice and how I was feeling in the matches. And it's night and day, really. I feel so much better. You know, but I think, you know, I reflect on that at the end of the tournament. I still know that, you know, things can change quickly. Not take anything for granted, but I'm happy with where my game's at heading into the quarterfinals.
Kei Nishikori next, a rerun of the quarterfinal in New York. It'll be very different here on the clay. I guess you're going to be prepared for a long one, perhaps?
Yeah, we played a couple of times last year. We played in the Davis Cup in February, which was five sets, and I think was one of my longest matches ever. You know, and that was a tough one. And then, obviously, again, we played in US Open, was five sets again, and a match that got away from me a little bit. You know, so need to learn a bit from that. But yeah, good chance. It's a long one. I mean, he returns well. He's, you know, very solid off both wings, and always a tough guy to play against. So expect a long one.
The fascination in tennis with super coaches doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon, does it? Especially with Andre Agassi joining the party. Yours, of course, is Ivan Lendl. There's always so much focus on him whenever he teams up with you at a slam. We know what he's like in the box. We know what he's like on the practice court because we see that. Can you give us a bit of an insight to what he's like behind the scenes in the locker room? What's the first thing he says to you when you come off court after a match like today?
Well, today he was pumped. He was happy with how I played. You know, the first couple of rounds, you know, he was pleased that I got through them.
What does the pumped Ivan Lendl look like?
It's kind of like that, on like he is on the TV, with maybe a slight grin. But no, I mean, he's very talkative, you know, away from the cameras and stuff. He, you know, he obviously loves tennis. He likes sort of dissecting matches and, you know, talking about the tactics and, you know, the things that went well in the match today, you know, the things that, as the match went on, that changed. You know, I had a quite long chat after the Del Potro match, you know, how, you know, with each set I started to play a little bit better, started to see the patterns of play well. And yeah, I mean, he talks a lot away from the cameras.
You've got your family here with you this week. When we spoke to you last year, you had recently become a dad. Now you're a dad to a 16-month-old. Is she showing any interest in tennis yet?
I think she's kind of recognises me when I'm on the TV.
Does
just
she?
Now. I have a video on my phone where I have like a little mini tennis racket, which I tried to give to her, and she literally grabbed it, kind of looked at it, and just walked over and put it straight in the bin. So I'm not sure she's going to be into it so much, but yeah, it's great that obviously my family's here and get the chance to come along and watch, and, you know, get to see them like now after the match, get to spend a bit of time with them before she goes off to bed, which is great.
How special. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you the best of luck for your quarterfinal and hopefully beyond.
Thank you.
So, Catherine, there is Andy Murray talking to you on Eurosport. And two things that struck me immediately. One was the expression night and day, in terms of the difference between his form relatively recently and his form against Khachanov and Del Potro in the previous round. I mean, he was clearly buoyed by the way things are progressing.
Oh, without question. I mean, he was fantastically relaxed in that interview today. You know, it was a very, for various sort of behind the scenes production based reasons, it was quite a stressful thing to get Andy Murray in our studio today. It was all quite last minute, quite pressed for time. We were very much hoping we would, but you just don't know until the last minute, because he's no obligation to come to the studio. He can say no, you know, I'd rather not, I'd rather get my rest and just do a straightforward three questions after the presser. So for various behind the scenes reasons, it was all quite a stressful situation. You just don't know which Andy Murray is going to show up. You don't know whether he's going to be relaxed and chatty or not. And I knew the second he walked into the studio that it was all going to be fine, because everything about his demeanour was a man in control and, you know, in the driving seat of what's happening to him this couple of weeks. And the contrast was stark, exactly as he said, you know, the phrase night and day. It was clear in his body language and the way he talked and behaved and reacted to everything. You know, I asked him, as you heard there, some more personal questions, which I don't always feel comfortable asking Andy Murray, because he's a very private chap. I don't necessarily feel comfortable asking any tennis player or professional sports person, because, you know, they're private people, their private lives are off limits, and, you know, we've no expectation that they'll talk about them. But he was very open there. It was a really lovely little anecdote about Sophia, and it was delightful. You know, you could see his face light up at the mention of her, and I wouldn't have asked that question had I not been speaking to a completely relaxed and at ease Andy Murray, let's put it that way. And I think he's going to beat Kei Nishikori. I think he's going to play Stan Wawrinka in the semi-finals. I'm not going to go any further with that prediction just now, but I think that's what's going to happen.
So when Andy Murray plays Stan Wawrinka in the semi-finals, who's going to win?
Oh, Christ. You meanie, David. You mean. I'm not going to say yet. Don't know.
All right, fine.
Which is code for I don't know at all.
Well, there's no point in asking me. I mean, my track record this week is not great. But yeah, that was the other thing I was going to say, is that it is very clear the way Murray's face lights up at the mention of his daughter. And it's lovely, isn't it? Anyway, other matches, other results. Stan Wawrinka, you mentioned, he defeated Gael Monfils. I mean, it felt pretty predictable, really. Close couple of sets, but you always felt that Wawrinka, he's the one who takes the chances. He's the one who's assertive. And Monfils is too reactive, I'm afraid, in these big matches. And you know, to me, it was an inevitability. We now know that Wawrinka will face Marin Cilic, who is in incredible form at the moment. Quietly, he's not making any fuss at all, but he's not dropped a set. Poor old Kevin Anderson had to retire midway through the second set, 3-love down because of injury. I'm not exactly sure what the problem was, but Cilic was comfortably in charge at that point anyway. Hasn't lost a set. And the other bit of news that has come out is that Cilic's former coach, Goran Ivanisevic, who led Cilic to the US Open title a few years ago, is no longer working with Thomas Burdick, Catherine.
Yeah, quite right. That news broke this morning. A statement was put out. I actually sort of, I don't know if any of this stuff is coincidence, really, but I spoke to him today as part of the, he's playing in the Legends event this week, as he always does here at every Grand Slam, I think. Well, not at the US Open, because I don't think they have a Legends event anymore, but he always plays the Legends. And so I caught up with him earlier, and I asked him about Andre Agassi and working with him. He speaks particularly well about Novak Djokovic, so I had it in my mind to ask him about that. And so I asked him about Andre Agassi, what he made of him being a coach, what he made of his impact on Djokovic, and what he made of him not being here anymore. And Goran couldn't wait to get out the words, "I don't think it's going to last." Those were the first words he said to me in that interview, that it's not going to last. He couldn't have said it any more strongly.
It's great to see Andre on the tour, but I don't think it's going to last. I don't think it's going to last. I don't think Andre wants to be a coach. I love Andre. He's one of my favorite tennis player, but he has too many things to be a coach to somebody like Novak Djokovic. You need to be a coach for 20, 25 weeks, and I don't think he has 3 weeks free in the whole year calendar to be a coach somebody.
In the week he's already spent with Novak, have you seen any impact on his game?
But to have to just look Andre Agassi on the stands, even if he's not your coach, it's nice to see him. And imagine sitting in your box. You can't play bad. You have to play. But like I said before, I don't see Andre with his time, with his who is Andre Agassi, being on the tour. I think I more see Steffi Graf becoming a coach than Andre.
Look, I am reading between lines here. Yes, we both know Goran quite well, but only, you know, as tennis journalists to tennis players. You know, we don't know him inside out. So I am very much reading between a line here. But I think Goran thinks, "I want that job." That's what I think.
Ooh, how exciting.
What I really think is that he's listened to the tennis podcast and thought, yeah, that is a dream partnership. I'm going to, Catherine's right. I'm going to suggest to Novak that this might be the right thing to do. Look, I mean, this is hugely preemptive, because at the moment, Novak Djokovic is coached in a weird sort of absent way by Andre Agassi, and that's great. And they both seem to be enjoying it. But I'm just passing on what 2001 Wimbledon champion Goran Ivanisevic said, and what he seemed to sort of imply between the lines. So there we go.
Oh, Catherine Whittaker with the intrigue here on the Tennis Podcast. And I must just correct you ever so slightly, Catherine, because not only do Goran and I work alongside one another in a sort of tennis journalist kind of capacity, we are, of course, fellow West Bromwich Albion fans as well, aren't we? So that's really important. It's not important at all. So it leaves Murray against Nishikori, then Wawrinka against Marin Cilic. We've got Nadal tomorrow up against Pablo Carreño Busta, who I heard today on the rival television channel ITV4. Jim Courier predicting that that would be a straightforward 2-2 and 2 sort of job for Nadal. And then Djokovic against Dominic Thiem, which is... Yeah, I mean, that's the big match, I think, out of those two, isn't it? The team against Djokovic is fascinating.
Yeah, they've tied themselves a bit in knots, the tournament, and landed up in a situation where they've had to put that unquestionably the most mouth-watering of the men's quarterfinals tomorrow on Longlen, because they've already put Rafael Nadal twice onto Longlen, and you can't really... I mean, I raised eyebrows the last time they put him onto Longlen. I thought they would only do it once in the tournament, and I certainly don't think they can do it three times. But Djokovic had only been out there once so far, so they're sort of in a situation where they had to put that on Longlen, despite it being the far better match. I agree with Jim Courier. I mean, not just because I agree with Jim Courier, but also because how... I mean, look... No one's going to listen to me if I try and disagree with Jim Courier. I mean, why would you listen to me? But I think that's a great matchup for Nadal. He traditionally does play great against Spaniards, and Spaniards do, with the odd exception, tend to play similar tennis. They'll give him a nice, clean ball and he'll thwack it away. Possibly not 2-2 and 2. There could be a, you know, a 6-4 set or a 7-5 set maybe. But basically, that's going to be a... straight sets victory, I think, for Nadal. Whereas on Longlen, I think things could be interesting between Thiem and Djokovic. I know their meeting in Rome is an utter damp squib, and it made me think that maybe this matchup just doesn't work for Dominic Thiem. Maybe it's just the styles of play, no matter how good he gets, it's just never going to be a matchup that works. But he's a problem solver, he's a trier, he's a worker. I think there are parallels between him and Kyle Edmund, which obviously is a very flattering comparison for Kyle Edmund. He very much pales in comparison level-wise at the moment. But in terms of their attitude, I think there are great comparisons. And I think he will have learnt an enormous amount from being thrashed by him in Rome. And I think Djokovic will probably win and set up the semi-final with Nadal, but I think it'll be one heck of a match and a far better contest than what we saw in Rome.
Yeah, Thiem, incidentally, the player who played against Djokovic last year on the same court and got pretty heavily beaten. I heard actually that from Carol Bouchard that Djokovic was really put out at being put on the Longlen court last year in that match, and that his coach, Marion Vida, at the time went nuts about it, and it ended up bringing out his best tennis, because you know what a defiant character Djokovic is he often plays his best tennis.
It was due to weather, wasn't it? They shouldn't have had to put any of either of the semi-finals on Longlen, but of course weather intervened and one of them had to go out there, and they were played simultaneously, I think, in the end, and he got the raw end of the deal, but somebody had to have the raw end of the deal, didn't they? So I feel for him, and you're absolutely right, it brought out the best in him. It'll be interesting to see how he enjoys being out there tomorrow, but I don't think you can argue with it, because 9-time champion Rafael Nadal has played on there twice, and Djokovic has only played on there once. The 1-time champion, yes, the defending champion, but 9 times, and he's been out on Longlen twice. So I'm not sure any grievance can be particularly justified, really.
Fair point, Catherine. Now, you go and get yourself another cheese board in, and we'll have a little chat about the women's side of the draw in just a moment.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So Catherine has her cheese board replenished, and we have the women's draw to talk about now, because Simona Halep against Carla Suarez Navarro was the first tennis I watched today, and blimey, you had to be quick, didn't you, to get an eyeful of it, because Halep was just in destructive form.
I mean, blimey, she blew me away, so goodness knows how Carla Suarez Navarro felt. They had an incredibly close head-to-head going into it, 6-5, I think, really neck and neck. But on clay, Suarez Navarro had won all, I can't remember, 4 or 5 of their previous meetings. Certainly, Halep had never beaten Suarez Navarro on clay, and that felt to me like a pretty decisive statistic. It was something that Chris Evert and I talked about courtside before the match. You know, I can believe that when I read that in the notes. I asked her what specifically it was in Carla Suarez Navarro's game which troubled Simona Halep, and you know, she doesn't give you any rhythm, she doesn't give you any pace, it's incredibly difficult, she frustrates you, and Halep is a player that is prone to frustration and to getting down on herself and to perhaps lacking in patience in the tough moments. You know, it just doesn't suit her, but there was not a whiff of any of that today. And that, for me, means that Simona Halep is, once again, the firm favourite for this title. And I can't hear many people arguing that. It doesn't mean she's going to win it, because it is still an incredibly open French Open. We're going to have a brand new Grand Slam champion, of course, but she is the firm favourite, without question.
The one caveat I would have just about that is, even when she was, I think, 6-1, 4-1 up, she suddenly got a little bit tense when she couldn't serve out the next game really, really quickly. And I think that if somebody can take her close enough in a match, you may see the nerves come out. You may see that anxiety show itself, which we've seen so often with her. Her next opponent is Elina Svitolina, who is the player who beat her in the Rome final. Now, Halep was dominating that match until she turned her ankle, and then it turned around pretty substantially. But Svitolina is made of pretty stern stuff. She got out of jail today because she was up against Petra Martic. It was 5-2 Martic, one game away from victory. She lost 5 games in a row, and Eurosport, who was showing that match on the Eurosport player, that Eurosport 1 just sort of flashed over to it for a couple of points while it was 5-2, and suddenly she could not put a ball in court. I mean, I didn't see the whole next 5 games, so maybe I'm doing Svitolina a disservice here, but it looked to me as though Martic was completely choking.
Yeah, she choked without question. I think she pretty much confessed to that in post-match press, and Svitolina got out of jail. But we all know winning a Grand Slam probably requires a bit of luck every now and then. You know, players, even great champions, benefit from choking to some degrees every now and then. So I don't think that necessarily says anything about Svitolina. I know we differ in our predictions about what's going to happen between Halep and Svitolina. I don't disagree with you about Halep still having wobbles, even in a match where she was utterly dominant. I think if she is going to win this title, it will come wobble-laden. It's not going to be plain sailing. It's definitely not going to be a Halep's playing great tennis. It's not going to be a Serena Williams-esque procession to victory, regardless of how well she's playing. Let's put it that way. There will be wobbles galore if she does end up winning it, and indeed if she doesn't as well. I know you think Svitolina's coming through that match with Halep, or certainly you did at the start of the tournament. I think Halep's coming through. I think she'll get revenge, but it's going to be close, isn't it?
Well, I have to say, I mean, it may not be close, because certainly when Halep is at her best, she's just a superior player on clay against Elena Svitolina, in my opinion. And the reason I went for Svitolina is because of the injury. I thought that Halep would not be moving like this. And frankly, well, I was wrong. So there we are. And I've said that a few times today, haven't I? Caroline Garcia defeated Elise Cornet in the tense battle.
Damp squib, David. They
France.
Even shook hands at the net and everything. Really disappointing. That was supposed to be the aggro match.
Yeah, you love all that, don't you, suddenly? I've suddenly turned you around. But yeah, it was a bit, because Garcia, frankly, was so good. And it did appear
awesome.
That it had taken some aggro to get the best out of Caroline Garcia.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. She came out firing, and it sort of leveled the playing field, didn't it? Because Garcia is a better tennis player than Elise Cornet. I think if she were being completely honest, Cornet would admit that talent-wise, Garcia is the better player. Andy Murray said she was a future number one 2 or 3 years ago. You know, talent-wise, she has that in her. There's a lot going on that potentially will prevent her from achieving that. But on her day, and today fully was her day, she is world-beating. I mean, really world-beating, perhaps with the exception of Serena Williams on her day. But anybody else, she has the potential to beat them. And maybe she's, you know, unlocked something today. Maybe she's found some kind of key, which, you know, and if she can sort of tap into whatever she found today, that sort of even at, I think she was 4-1 in the second set, I was still saying to everyone that I was watching with, I can't believe this isn't going to a third. You know, it feels like the sort of match where there's going to be a wobble and there's going to be a huge shift in momentum and it's all going to change. And okay, there's a little wobble, she got broken back, but it wasn't much of a wobble. It really wasn't. And she broke Cornet to take the match, and she did so very decisively. And I was very impressed with her today. I still don't have any confidence that she'll be able to repeat that in the next round against Pliskova, but it is a big opportunity, because as well as Pliskova's done to reach the quarterfinal, she's had a relatively easy route, beat Veronica Cepeda-Roig, your favourite player, David, today, requiring three sets to do so. And, you know, she's Karolina Pliskova on clay, you know, end of story. So it's a huge opportunity. And the problem is, she will know it's a huge opportunity. And that right there could be the problem.
Yeah. Can I just, on a note to end this podcast, Catherine, can I just tell you about Veronica, how do I say it again?
Cepeda-Roig,
who is of Paraguay, who is 24 years of age, 5'4" tall. Her father, Eduardo, owns a gas station. Her mother, Edith, is a retired dentist. Her brother is an economist, and her sister, Estefania, is an architect. She was introduced to tennis at the age of 5 by her brother and sister. She is an aggressive baseliner with a favourite shot of a forehand. Her favourite tournament is the French Open. Her favourite surface is clay. She speaks Spanish and English. Her tennis idols growing up were Roger Federer and Kim Clijsters. She enjoys going to the cinema and spending time with her family and friends. And if she hadn't been a tennis player, Catherine Whittaker, Veronica Cepeda-Roig would have been a nutritionist. And her long-term goal is to reach the top 20.
David Law discovers Wikipedia, ladies and gentlemen. Can I just tell you one other thing about her that you won't find on Wikipedia?
Oh, yeah, go on then.
She chews gum throughout her tennis matches, or certainly she did today. How weird is that?
Crikey, that strikes me as a bit dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Surely that's a choking risk. She chewed gum throughout that match. I found it Look, tweet us if you've ever seen that before I'm not talking club level. In a top level professional tennis match. I certainly haven't. I noticed it instantly. It really jarred. Look, it worked for her for a set and a bit. But, it really struck me. So there you go. Add that to our Wikipedia page, someone.
Yeah, will do. Absolutely. Right, there we are. Catherine Whittaker, you better get to bed because it's rest time. It's 12:45. This is the sort of dedication that Catherine Whittaker is bringing to the Tennis Podcast this year, folks. Daily podcasts we've been bringing you from the Tennis Podcast.
Can I just say something quickly on that subject? Because we hadn't necessarily planned to bring daily podcasts from the French Open. We'd promised to do them from all the other slams where David Law is present, and we're doing our very best and have succeeded so far in bringing you daily podcasts from this one as well. And pretty much the only way that that's been made possible is because we've been able to employ an editor, which takes a lot of the manpower and time required away from us. I mean, obviously, we still have to record the podcast and we love doing so, but it is an enormous, enormous help to have an editor working with us. And that simply wouldn't be possible if it weren't for all of our Kickstarter backers. And I'm so very grateful. There's been so many kind people on Twitter saying, you know, thank you and how much they're enjoying the daily podcast from the French. But really, it would not be even close to possible without the Kickstarter backing. So thank you.
Indeed. Well said, Catherine. And that editor's name is Patrick. We'll give him a quick name check because he'll be listening to this while he edits this podcast in about 10 minutes' time. Catherine Whittaker, go and get to bed. You'll be up bright and early to preview the day's play on Eurosport. Don't forget the whole thing live on Eurosport and on the Eurosport player as well. I'm David Law. I'm not there. I'm just going to keep watching and making rubbish predictions. Catherine Whittaker will be there talking to the great and good of the tennis world. We'll be back with another tennis podcast tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.